Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here are your hosts, Joe Kuzma and Brian E. Roach.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. My name is Joe Kuzma, and I am joined by the one and only my brother from another mother, the host who doesn't like or cannot or is not permitted to eat toast, the one Mr. Brian E. Roach. Brian, what's going on, my friend?
It's a lovely day. It's a victory day. And I'm glad of all those things, even if it was the less than beautiful, victory is a victory.
Yeah, man. I mean, a win is a win is a win. And I don't know how we even approach this particular post-game show because, I was at the game and, I'm going to ask you some questions as an observer on television because I don't even know that I want to go back and rewatch this. It was pretty boring. I mean, it was pretty bad. Let's put it this way. We were talking about the FanDuel Sportsbook and the odds and how the bookies always get it right. What was it? 38 was the over and under, or 38.5, and it was 6.5 to the Steelers. Just saying, man. Yeah. I'm just saying. What's the final score here? You got 16-10, 26 total points, and a 6 points margin between the two teams. They always get it right somehow. And you and I were talking about this in the pregame. As much as you would like to have seen, the Steelers just wipe the floor with this Bengals team. And we didn't think it was going to actually happen. We thought the bookies probably did have it right. We thought it was going to be low scoring. We thought it was going to be a Chris Boswell day. And in some ways, it was Chris Boswell, 3 field goals. So, the same thing. Yeah, 30 for 30 at against the Bengals, I guess, too, lifetime. And, it was I'm gonna speak for the actual surroundings. The Bengals fans, it was kind of funny. There was a few of them. There was a group of ladies that were particularly trashed and trying to talk in fun, talk smack. And one of her comments was, she goes, "Well, your team's not much better than ours." And it's like, well, there are 5 games and there are about to be 6 games more. Okay, yeah, well, we'll see after the game. I'm like, we're going to win. I'm like, really, your first game? and I was having some fun, but I was like, hey, where can I find you afterwards? And, of course, they were high and dry, long and gone. The Bengals fans, they were, for the ones who actually showed up, the stadium was like half empty, and it's already pretty a cavernous, kind of boring concrete block down there at Paul Brown Stadium. And, for the fans who did show up, they're in mostly good spirits. They understood that their team was, not good. And there were also some calls or some chants for "We want Andy." They actually wanted Andy Dalton back, and I can't say that I blame them. But both teams, obviously the Steelers and the Bengals with their quarterback woes. I think I'm going to approach this first from, I think we're going to get some people who are trying to be in the "I told you so" category of, Mason Rudolph and, holding on to the ball forever and not being able to, make decisions on the field and stuff. And we were just joking offline, but I have a Mason Rudolph jersey now, and I just purchased it, and it was my first time. I got it in, and it was a road jersey. It's white, so I was able to wear it yesterday, and now I wanted to put a coat on afterwards and not be seen with it, but hey, in all seriousness here, I got two things to go with here that I got to get off of my chest here, because you know how I always defended, I used to say, the GOAT Landry Jones. I kind of wonder where this team would be if Landry Jones was the quarterback. I don't know if they'd be any better or worse this year, because just everything, it's like they're snake bitten. Everything just is not good on offense. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. But, I used to defend Landry Jones on some of the interceptions. And then there were the naysayers of the Landry Jones stuff, I never saw him in the light of Big Ben. I always got to put that out there because I never know when there's a new listener or somebody that has, short-term memory that doesn't remember some of the things that I say. But, as far as a backup, I didn't think he was completely terrible. But, there was always the excuse of okay, I'll give you an example. Martavis Bryant touchdown was against the Cardinals, maybe. Kind of almost like a walk-off, and it was like an 80-yard touchdown many moons ago. And it was like somebody said, well, that was like 5 yards of Landry Jones, man, and like 75 yards of Martavis Bryant doing all the work and making him look good and this and that. Well, I get it, but this is a team sport, right? So I just kind of want to throw out, because inevitably somebody's going to be like, see, we told you so, Duck Hodges, blah, blah, blah. Duck? Okay. Very, very much more decisive with the football. I'm going to give him that much. I think Charlie Batch hit the nail on the head in his post game. He says he has anticipation, and it makes it look like the ball's coming out faster than it really is. And I have to agree with that. I've always thought, boom, he locks in on something, and boom, it's out. You know what I mean? And that's what Mason Rudolph has been lacking. He's been lacking confidence, I want to say, Brian, since the Earl Thomas hit. And we'll come back to that, too, because we're going to be talking about all these things. But I just want to say, I want to throw this out there based on my Martavis Bryant from Landry Jones comment. Outside of the James Washington big play touchdown that went for, what, 78, 79? What was it for? 79. Okay. Duck Hodges, the other 10 passes, 4 of 10. And you take for 118 yards. Okay, I get he had a little more going on, maybe. 118, you take away the 79, 39 yards. Okay, 4 passes, 39 yards. Not much better than what Mason had going. The Steelers still have offense problems. I'm not doing this to rain on the Duck Hodges parade, but we've been, you want to say, cautiously optimistic, or at least pulling back some of, you know, these calls to put him in, and he's going to be this immediate major upgrade. The major upgrade's next year when they get Ben Roethlisberger back. I think everybody now sees how big of a difference. It's crazy to think where this team would be if Ben never got hurt. And that's kind of where my point is that Tomlin's going to roll the dice, and I got to give Tomlin a lot of credit here, and then I'll let you be long-winded. Tomlin has, brass whatever, or of steel, the cojones, to make this move. This reminds me of, what, Nick Saban with Alabama and switching quarterbacks and stuff like that. Mike Tomlin realizes we're at 500. We're in the wild card hunt, and by all means necessary, we must win this game. There's no hurt feelings. He gives Mason Rudolph a chance to start the second half. He sees a lot of the same hesitancy and stuff out of him, yanks him. They get the one big splash play that they need, and they're able to secure and do the rest of this mostly on the ground in order to get the win. Hats off to Mike Tomlin for doing this, because it looked like the roster pretty much, this is my tacky joke. I was sitting with Ryan Lippert, who's one of our contributors. I said, hey, there's somebody in the stands with a Tevin Jones jersey. Oh, no, wait, that's Tevin Jones. It's, you know, and not against Tevin Jones, but you're seeing Caron White, Trey Edmonds. I'm like, who's 17? Deion Kane, Tevin Jones, Benny Snell. If you were telling me this was going to be Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph, if you were telling me this was going to be the matchup, and it was the same thing, Ryan said he would have bet his life savings on this. If you told me it was going to be Ryan Finley against Mason Rudolph or Duck Hodges in this game, he said he would have bet his life savings. He would have bet the house and everything on it. And I have to agree. It's just crazy to see, you know, what Mike Tomlin has been able to do, even against probably one of the second worst, next to the Redskins, at least in record, second worst, or no, they actually are the worst. The Redskins are, you know, at least have a win. One of the worst football teams in the NFL right now. You know, it's just crazy. It's just crazy, but they were still able to get it done. They didn't lose.
They didn't lose. I was going to start off with my normal because the duck came in, and I didn't do that. But, you know, look, I have been much more critical of Mason Hodges. Yeah, I'm just going to combine the two guys.
We can build them. We can build them. We can make them better.
Yeah, let's just put them together. Give Duck Mason's height. Give Mason Duck's decision making. I've been much more critical of Mason Rudolph than you have. And I will say this, you know, even being critical of him, I was in agreement that he was probably their best chance to win. But that was pretty obviously not the case yesterday. After the 4 interception game against that other team in Ohio, Mason came out and didn't look particularly savvy in this game and continue to have the same issues that he's been having. And I agree with you. I think it's a monstrous lack of confidence in the sense that, you know, he sees something, but he does not trust he's going to get it there. Or that the window is open wide enough. I don't believe things like the James Washington catch are blatantly always, not there when Mason's playing. I'm sure there's stuff there. We've seen it. We've seen him miss things.
Yes.
It got to a point where, after the defense had its lapse, allowing, future Hall of Famer Ryan Finley to bomb them into submission down the field. Joe Hayden had some regression on a couple of those plays. But nonetheless, after that happened, Tomlin's looking at his team and saying, all right, we have no choice. We have to do something to spark this offense. The fact that he comes in and almost right off the bat has this monstrous play, which in many ways is more due to James Washington posterizing. I thought that might have been the same guy that Le'Veon Bell posterized with the stiff arm. I can't remember.
You know what? I could pull it up here in a second because I actually just had it. I was working on it for the website. I'll get you the number here in a second because it's sitting in the stands. I don't remember who it was, but it very much looked like something. I made a comment about that too. I was like, I miss Le'Veon Bell just trucking Dre Kirkpatrick.
Yeah. And that's what I thought. That's who I thought it might have been, but I wasn't positive. And, that was a grown-ass man moment. So James Washington can have his grown-ass man stiff arm and made that play what it ended up being, which was something they desperately needed. Did he look better in the pocket even after that? Maybe a little. They obviously did not move the ball tremendously well even after that play. They said, I think on the post game on CBS, Nate, whatever his name is, said, Burleson, welcome probably. To the Duck Dynasty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nate Burleson said, welcome to the Duck Dynasty. A lot of folks, I have a poll that I think is still running on Twitter. I know that Terry put one up and a lot of other people did as well, asking who's the quarterback from this point on. Yesterday the game wasn't on here, so I was sitting with the Southeast Pennsylvania Steelers fan group at a Dave and Buster's watching the game, and I will tell you that the cheer that went up when Duck Hodges came in was the most excited these guys had been the last couple times I've been there. Let me tell you, it was loud.
Well, that's kind of the point I'm getting at. I don't understand what merits or deserves that type of cheering, other than I think it's just that much that all of a sudden you've turned sour on the other guy. Like, I don't see anything that Duck has done to deserve. It's a little different when, you had the Cleveland Browns come to Heinz Field many years ago. Landry Jones starts the game. He plays, like, one series, gets hurt, like, on the third play, stubs his finger or something, and Ben comes in as the backup, and everybody cheers. That is in a whole different category than we saw Duck warming up on the sideline. We're like, he's putting his helmet on. We spotted it right away. We were sitting about 10 rows behind the Steelers bench. And are they really going to put him in? And he had Rudolph and Hodges both standing there. Mike Tomlin did. And there they go. They send them right out. And everybody's like, the Steelers fans that are there, and, some of them staying warm with their favorite adult beverage. There was a cheer there, too. And I can't necessarily say that I'd be against the cheer. I'm cheering just because they're making a move. You got to do something because it's been stagnant. And I mean, for so many different reasons, it's stagnant. BJ Finney didn't necessarily have the cleanest snaps to Duck Hodges to start that series either. The very first snap was like almost like right at his ankles. And you're dealing with, what did I say, like Caron White, Deion Kane. I just wonder if Rudolph connects with Deion Kane on that long pass. If Deion Kane, let's say, stays in bounds, DB falls down. It was probably B.W. Webb because they were targeting the crap out of him, and rightfully so. And Deion Kane stays and scampers another 20-some yards or whatever and gets a touchdown if we're talking about this morning. But to add to your kind of notes here, the Steelers were on a mini bye. which afforded them a little bit of extra practice, a little bit of extra rest as well. And that means some snaps for Duck Hodges. And in fact, Mike Tomlin was asked this, was he not, Brian? Like, he wasn't really very, what do you want to say, non-committal to saying that he would stick with Mason Rudolph for an entire game, that he wouldn't make a switch. You know, I think the big thing is here, I like what Charlie Batch has said about Duck Hodges. He's not even supposed to be here. It's like Clerks. He's not even supposed to be here today. And yeah, he's playing with house money. And so, you know, he doesn't have like the pressure being a draft pick or anything. I'm sure he has plenty of pressure. You know what I mean? Because his job could be gone like, boom, snap your fingers. You know what I mean? But at the same time, yeah, what do you got to lose? And he's playing like he has nothing to lose. This is the way the Steelers should be playing. Therefore, we talked about players losing their confidence. We've talked about Cortez Allen in the past and Artie Burns as far as cornerbacks. We talked about Chris Boswell as a kicker. When you lose your confidence, and it's at certain positions, it happens at wide receiver too. Guy can't catch the ball. Let's just say Dante Moncrief, even though I think he had a hurt hand. And once that's gone, it's, you know, it's hard to get that back. You need some you need healing time. Therefore, I have make no bones about it. I believe Duck Hodges is the starter against Cleveland Browns. They're going to be playing at home, which is a huge benefit. And they got an axe to grind. And I'm sure they probably feel, if Tomlin felt he had more preparation, he may have made this move on the Thursday night game too. But they, what, 2 days of practice in all reality to get ready for that game? So therefore, you don't make that move. But with the extra time, you're trying to see what's getting going here, because obviously they saw attacking the safeties downfield. They saw that. They more than likely ran a play. I may not have seen it. I know I've seen some guys open, and I'm like, oh, he's not getting to him, or he's holding the ball too long, and maybe Ramon Foster gets pushed into him, and that was pretty much kind of the interception right there. It was like, get rid of the ball. Nearly had a safety again. It's like, get rid of the ball, get rid of the ball, get rid of the ball. And we're not the only people sitting there watching in the stands or watching on our couches or TV or, you know, with the Steelers fan group like you were, that are thinking this. The coaches are thinking this too, and they're seeing it, and they know exactly what's supposed to be run. Big Duck Hodges gets like a warm-up throw or two, and then it was immediately, we're attacking that, we saw it open, this is going to work, and boom, it works. And now, you know, he is the hero, but he makes the play, and he makes the necessary play. So in the same time, you know, I got to give him a pat on the back, because that play had to take time to develop, where, you know, Rudolph, He's holding on to the ball and letting everything try and develop, and then everybody ends up covered. Hodges is leading people with the ball, not throwing behind them. Seems to be okay, fairly accurate, and I liked that was a very crisp pass downfield. I can't complain about that pass whatsoever. It just kind of, from there wasn't anything else, is what I'm trying to say. So temper your expectations and hope. Unlike what's happened with Rudolph here, you've hit a wall. And something's, I'm telling you, I really do feel like it's a confidence thing, because in that Baltimore game, I never felt like they were out of it. I felt like, you know, he was going to compete. And I think that's what people saw too with Duck. And it's a great thing that Duck was able to come in and keep things moving in that same game as well. But, you know, then we saw it against the Chargers, and there wasn't a whole lot there other than a lot of Steelers defensive plays. And the defense really came through on this one too, but we'll talk about that in a second. So I think you have two guys, not necessarily, I don't want to say different skill sets, because I just think there's one guy that is reading things a lot faster. He threw for a bazillion yards in college, even at a lower level. When you're dealing with air raid offense, guess what? You don't run the football very often. And that's what they do at Samford. So he has a lot of reps and a lot of, you know, it's just these things. Now you're graduating. Now you're going up to a higher level. You're, you know what I mean? This is a higher education. And if he grasps these things and sees them, you know, in the real time and in the faster paced NFL, it could easily translate to success. So, you know, I wish nothing but the best for both of these guys. I will close this with saying, I don't think we've seen the last of Mason Rudolph when it comes to being a Steeler. His opportunity is now blown, though. He's going to have to earn that back. Or if they, you know, they drop like the next three games or something, and you might see him come in and get some more reps or snaps or whatever, because then the games don't, you know, matter as much. They're not competing for a playoff spot. But as long as they're in competition here and Duck doesn't falter, I think this is Duck's job to lose now.
I think that you know, they asked him about that in the, they asked Tomlin about that in the post game, and basically he said, I may have made that decision already, but not going to share it with you.
He will in a couple days.
Yeah, he will. Absolutely. I think, you know, look, you've got a scenario where for more than two games, your quarterback has looked not good. Turning the ball over left and right, not looking decisive. And so I think, yeah, I think you kind of stated it as it is right now. I think this is Duck Hodges' position to lose. But don't be surprised if you see Mason Rudolph back again, because I talked about the big giant cheer and I know that was a point for you to that was one of your firing off points because of why, but I mean the point is Steelers fans tend to fall in love with these legendary guys, and that's what Duck Hodges has become, a legendary guy.
not because he's
produced Hall of Fame stats, not because he's the greatest guy, but because he's a guy sitting at the back end of the roster who tries really hard and who the fans have fallen in love with. And he has a cool nickname.
Bingo.
And he was a duck caller, right? And so everybody's...
Yeah, the hunting group likes him. He was undrafted. Zach Celadonia called him. He said, we found our Tony Romo.
Yeah, everybody just... You want him to do well. But I agree. You got to temper your expectations here. This offense is still going to be...
You just called him legendary.
I know. Well, it's because that's what we think he is, right?
Yes,
well,
I don't
think he's legendary.
I know.
But Steelers fans think the legend of the duck will save us. And,
never know.
Look, I hope you never know. I hope the kid does great, right? I hope that Zacadonia is correct. And we have found a Tony Romo. I don't think we have, but... We'll see. As you said, I'm agreeing with, it's his position to lose. But I just, you should not expect sudden offensive explosion. Is I guess what I'm saying here. This offense is still not good.
Correct.
Right now, they have a lot of issues. I was very encouraged to see Benny Snell football come out, so that's good. And we had some nice decent runs. The number 40, whose name I can't even remember.
White.
Teron White had a really nice run.
Curran, with a K.
Curran. Yes. I don't know people's names.
That's fine.
At least I'm saying Minka right now.
I know.
So, look, Mr. White, if you do a little Fast Willie Parker for me, I'll get your name right. Okay. but I just don't know that we should expect a lot. What is going to carry this, and we've said this for many games, what is going to carry this team is defense.
Mm-hmm.
The defense is going to either, they're going to live and die by how well their defense plays. And that is what's going to get them through. What they need on the offensive side is not to turn the ball over, to sustain a few drives so the defense can stay fresh, and to get points when points are there to be taken. You cannot do things like throw interceptions. Admittedly, this one is not really Mason's fault, but in the red zone, you can't turn the ball over. You got to convert. Look, I think the Steelers have they even scored 30 points this year?
You know what? I could look that up. That was a good point that I was thinking of, especially when we were talking about the bookies. But, very much a lack of offensive firepower. No matter who's in there, either a quarterback or whether you have Juju or James Conner or not, everybody's been underwhelming, I guess. To answer your question, they got up to 27 the first game against the Dolphins and also against the first game against the Bengals and also against the Dolphins, 26 apiece with the Seahawks and Colts, and 24 with the Chargers. But I believe almost all of those games were aided with defensive scores as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of skews the points. Yeah, it skews the points for the team because it's not all offensively scored.
Yeah, they're not going to produce a lot of points. They just need to. The defense has been doing a great job of holding teams down. If the defense can hold them to 20 or less, That's what the offense has to produce, and there's going to be times that the defense has to help them produce it.
Well, yeah, obviously, and you were looking for a big play from the defense at any point. Before I jump, I do want to talk defense here, but give me 1 second with just to point out, too, so somebody's like, oh, you got to adjust your glasses. Okay, aside from the one big pass downfield, there was only one other pass beyond 10 yards that Devlin Hodges attempted, and he didn't complete it. So he completed a bunch of them. I think one was for 6. There's one here that went 1 yard beyond the line and 3 or 4 yards beyond the line of scrimmage, and then there was one that was right behind it, a screen. There was a couple drops as well or whatever, and that's the thing. The guys just got to hold on to the ball. Seeing Deion Kane actually hold on to the ball, Johnny Holton would not have held on to that same ball, even the James Washington one maybe. So those have been the killer ones, and those are the difference makers in the game, regardless if you could punch it in or not. As far as running the football, they should have been able to. This was like one, maybe almost the worst run defense in the NFL. This team had been given up like all 450 some yards a game total. The Steelers got a 339 out of this. They totally owned the time of possession, 34-40. But that red zone, the red zone pick, that was bad. That's a killer. That's a game killer, and that's exactly what we said they could not do going into this. However, you flip this now. You know, at least they were converting on some third downs, 5 of 16. The Steelers defense held the Bengals to 2 of 12, which, you know, there was like maybe one where I'm just like, oh, come on, man. You want them all, right? You know what I mean? And it just doesn't always work that way. But otherwise, you know, outside of two big plays for the Bengals, there wasn't a whole lot going on there either with Finley. Tyler Boyd, that was going to be a flag, even though it wasn't thrown on the field, and he completed it. He caught it with one arm. That was basically, he had Terrell Edmonds had him by the pads, and then the great fade that he did on Joe Hayden, almost a button hook. He button hooked him kind of, because, I mean, he just got his whole body right in front of Joe Hayden, spun him around, and he was wide open, and just about anybody should be able to complete that pass if you're anticipating and doing those things. But as the Bengals would have it, their offensive line is atrocious, and they started to give up some stuff to the Steelers. There was some definitely pressure being brought on Finley. Despite, you know, maybe not, they got 4 sacks in this game. They weren't always necessarily bringing them down, but Cam Hayward hit Finley 4 times in this game, even though he only had one that technically counted for a sack. You look at some of the other things. You know, we were ragging on Joe Hayden just a little bit here. 3 passes defensed. I mean, he came out of nowhere. Like, it was almost back-to-back plays where he knocks the ball down, slapped it to the ground. Mike Hilton was doing this as well, even though he got beat maybe once on a play. You're going to get beat. These are still professional football players. These are still world-class athletes that you're playing against, whether a team is 0-10 or 10-0. It's just a matter of, you know, some are better than others, obviously. That's why you have a Hall of Fame and things of that nature. So, but we did see, I think we were talking about this, just tailgating. It's like, hey, where's Devin Bush been, you know, with all the splash? If you remember heading into the season, him being the number one overall draft pick, he was going to be the savior of the defense. And quietly, that narrative started at the beginning of the year. He was making some big plays, tackling machine, right? And that's kind of slowly dissipated now. But he comes back and ends up punching the ball out. And that could have been disastrous, too, for the Steelers' fortunes here. And guess who's there to pick up the ball again? Always.
Minka.
My goodness, man. The guy is like, it's like he has magnets in his gloves or something, and the ball just like gravitates to him like a Jedi mind trick. He's just using the force and pulling the ball to himself. And it's just, that just blows my mind. And a lot of people, I don't know, man. I don't know if it's just right place, right time, or he's just really that on another level as far as awareness and everything. You're going to keep talking about this trade and that pick, and we're not going to have anything to do for the first day of the draft come next year. But we can just keep talking about how great that using that pick had been. You think about the Browns blowing one for Odell Beckham. I don't know that they'll have the same things to say come 6 months from now. But the other big one too, Big Bud. So, you know, Ryan sitting there is he's a big Kentucky fan. You know, on offense, he's got the Benny Snell jersey on. He got to see some Benny Snell football, almost 100 yards rushing, too. On the other side, Big Bud just What'd he do? He was like, give me your lunch money, and just took the football right off of him, man. And that's how the game pretty much ends. And that was a huge play that was entirely needed at that point. I think TJ's snaps were a little limited in the game. He got banged up at one point, came off, and we were seeing Chickalo and Ola out there probably a little more than what you would probably be used to. I've had to look at it. Yeah, TJ played about 78% of the game, 45 of the 58 defensive snaps, where Dupree played almost the entire game, 55 snaps of the 58. So, yeah, I mean, it was a much-needed big play, and all the naysayers that who are out there, I think they're starting to get, you know, where we were. I don't know if he'll consistently do this, but he's having a heck of a year this year, whether, you know, a contract year is motivation or not. I don't know how I feel about him entering free agency or if he's like going to be somebody you're looking to retain. We're going to see how this keeps going forward, but it's definitely refreshing to see a guy that for, you know, the previous 4 years, the fans were really down on this guy, really, you know, kind of almost the same way they're down on Mason Rudolph now. Oh, this guy's a bum, this and that. He's a bust. Making big plays, sealing games the way that you would expect a first-round draft pick or former first-round draft pick to do. So my hat's off to Bud Dupree as well.
Yeah, I think I'm going to start calling him Triple B, Big Bad Bud, Triple B, because that's what I said after that play. That was just Big Bad Bud right there. And this is here. You want to this? The tale of Bud Dupree can be summarized in this. Our own Eric Herman has stated, we cannot lose Bud Dupree. This is the same guy who's been wanting Bud gone for, what, 4 years?
He wanted to cut him to not pay him the $9 million whatever on the fifth-year bonus for the roster
absolutely.
Bonus.
Absolutely, and now it's like there's a guy, the only guy we can't lose is Bud. We cannot lose Bud Dupree. Talk about a flip-flop. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Well, he admits it at least, you know.
Yes, he does. He admits he's flip-flopped on it. But that's... You know, look, guys take time to develop. And we both have said, we said it at the beginning of the year, Bud has a breakout year this year. We don't know if they're going to be able to keep him. They may not be able to pay him. I also want to call out J.J. Watt. Shut up, J.J. Watt. Because in his tweet about T.J. Watt, the third line in it was, pay that man. Shut up.
Yeah, we don't. Not yet. It's coming.
Not yet. He'll get paid, but shut up. We don't need that controversy yet.
Yeah. Not only that, JJ, aren't you supposed to be somewhere? Like, go play a game, or at least stand on the sidelines, or whatever.
Go get rehab done. Because yeah. Shut up and stop causing drama on the Steelers. Gee, mini Christmas.
Those darn Watt boys. I don't know what's in the water, but where they were drinking. But yeah, you know, we don't have a whole lot much else to say. It wasn't the, you know, a lot of fireworks outside of the plays we already mentioned. A lot of boring football, some three and outs, you know, a lot of, what was the possession like? It was for the Steelers was a punt, a pick, a punt, a field goal, a punt, end the half, a punt. The touchdown, punt, punt, field goal, punt, field goal. You go to the Bengals, it's four punts, a TD, two punts, a field goal, two punts, a fumble, punt, fumble. Ugly football. It wasn't even bad weather, man. It was a little chilly. It was a little brisk, but that's about it.
There was like something like, what, 10 or 11 three and outs in this game between the two teams. I mean, it was the battle of futility. It was not a pleasant game to watch. Unless you totally just love defense, you know, and all you really want to see is offenses look pathetic, because that's pretty much how that game was.
Yeah, it was more pathetic offense than great defense for the most of the stretch. And, you know, Mike Tomlin realized that too, because, I mean, some people are like, oh, go for it. You know, you're close, fourth and one. They were playing a field position battle the entire time because he knew it was going to be a tight game.
Absolutely. And again, this is the... unless Devlin Hodges, channels his inner Hall of Fame quarterback and somehow becomes more than we expect him to be and maybe becomes what 90% of Steelers Nation seems to think he is, this is the kind of game we're going to have the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Hard-fought, close games, forget blowouts because we're not going to get any of them unless the defense scores about 30 points.
Well, aside from the Ravens, that's the way it figures. You don't have explosive, super explosive. I know Cleveland, you know, put what they put on the Dolphins, but it's the Dolphins. Even the Steelers got their highest point total against them. But, you know, it's the Browns, the Cardinals, the Bills, and the Jets. They all figure to kind of play out that way. And then when you have a AFC North game like that between two rivals, it could be low scoring as well. I just wanted to leave you with one more thing because I didn't know from the stands, Brian. Forward progress on the would-be safety? Do the refs stink or no? I don't know. They would not show the replay in Paul Brown, of course, because it would have been against the Bengals.
Let me just say this. The refs obviously stink. They missed a blatant face mask, a blatant late hit. They missed so many calls. The refs stink. Let me put it this way. They're never going to call that a safety. Forward progress is a fiction.
Yeah.
And unless you are completely, totally in the end zone when hit, they're always going to give you the benefit of the doubt. They do it all the time. So that didn't surprise me. Was it a safety? Probably. But I think you could see in the replay that the ball probably, when he was initially hit, the ball wasn't in the end zone. So
okay, that's what I was looking for. I don't want to go spouting off on things where they weren't showing it. There were Bengal logos or whatever, little kitty cat things on the scoreboard, and it was like, hey, I want to see the replay. Of course, they're not going to show it because it would benefit, you know, Tomlin and everybody standing on the sidelines with the red hanky. So, Brian, hey, man, thanks for joining me once again. And we'll either reconvene or some configuration, you, the professor, me, somehow, you know, around this Thanksgiving holiday, that's Turkey Day coming up. So we will have a pregame show for the Browns game later this week that you could enjoy with either your turkey and mashed potatoes or your leftovers. So enjoy Turkey Day, Brian. Thanks once again, man.
Yes, thank you, sir. Enjoy the holiday. I did want to mention one last thing. I got a new follower on Twitter. His I don't know what his handle is, but his nom de plume is LG. And I felt compelled to share this with you because he says, I'm a huge Landry Jones fan. Don't judge me.
Oh, I won't judge him. In fact, I'm going to buy that man a beer.
There you go.
We could talk Landry Jones war stories, and we can watch some XFL football, you know, in the, you know, late winter, early spring when they start up. So, all right, folks, that'll do it for us. Look for us again later this week. Hang in there. We may have some other programming from our other folks like Mike Palaya and Terry Fletcher as well. Until next time, don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. Very important. And my name is Joe Kuzma. His name is Brian E. Roach. Until next time, we encourage everyone to be safe, be good, and we'll catch you later.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.